The Buddha's teachings are all about making choices between the things that you feel like doing and the things that would be for your long-term welfare and happiness. It starts with generosity. You have something, you could either keep it, use it yourself, or you can give it away. Your immediate impulse is to keep it. But when you try giving it away, you find that there's a joy that comes with giving. It goes deeper than simply partaking of whatever you had. The same with virtue. Sometimes there are things you would like to say and do that would not be all that virtuous. But then you think about the long term, and you decide to refrain, say, from lying or stealing or killing, taking intoxicants. And the same principle applies to meditation. You could be sitting here thinking about the world outside, the world of your life, your daily life, or you could be focused on the present moment to develop powers of concentration and mindfulness. And because there's a choice and because there are parts of the mind that would go with either choice, it's going to be a battle inside. This is why an important part of the practice is getting to know the different members of your mind's committee, which side they're on, and learning how to side with the ones that are on the side of your long-term welfare and happiness. Because the ones that are going for immediate pleasure, your immediate preferences, they don't have much of a plan. And it's as if they don't care about your long-term welfare and happiness. You can ask yourself, do you really want to identify with them? And you realize that you don't have to. Just because there's an idea in your mind doesn't mean you have to lay claim to it. That sometimes those ideas will have some strong ways of pushing themselves onto you. An important part of the skill, the practice, is learning how to resist their push. So when you come to meditation, if you've had some practice in saying no to your unskillful members of the mind's committee, you've got a good practice. You've got some confidence that yes, you can do it, and yes, it will be good for you, and you'll be happy you did. Years back, when Ajahn Sawat was teaching in Massachusetts, it was his first time teaching a large group of Westerners. And after the second or third day, he turned to me and he said, have you noticed how grim these people are? And he was right. They looked very grim. And his analysis of why was interesting. He says it's because they don't have any practice with the Buddhist teachings on generosity and virtue. So one, they don't have confidence in the Buddha. And two, they don't have confidence in themselves. This may be one of the reasons why when meditation, especially mindfulness, is introduced to the West, there's a huge emphasis on just being okay with whatever comes up in your mind. Because when you're trying to get the mind still, there will be voices in the mind or signs of the mind that you don't like to see coming up. And if you don't have any confidence that you don't have to identify with them, it's going to be hard to not get blown away by them. I was teaching another retreat one time when in the middle of one afternoon this one retreatant started bursting out crying. And everybody else in the room was very quiet, as if nothing was going on. And he kept on sobbing for quite a while. Found out later he had been a drug dealer. And it suddenly hit him, all the people's lives he had ruined by selling them drugs. Now, if he hadn't had that scar in his past, it wouldn't have come up. Or even he had it, but if he had some good practice with the generosity and virtue, he would have been able to withstand it, knowing that he had a good side to himself as well. This is why the Buddha teaches that a good foundation for the meditation is generosity and virtue. And having a right view about your mind, the thoughts come up in the mind. Some of them are the results of your current decisions, and some of them come from past decisions. And if they come from past decisions, you have the opportunity to say yes or no to them. Do you want to continue with them or not? As in the Buddhist descriptions of getting the mind into mindfulness, which is basically his description of how to get the mind into concentration. On the one hand, you you keep track of something here in the present moment, like the breath. And you work with the breath. You don't just watch whatever's going to happen. You try to breathe in a way. You experiment with breathing in different ways. Find what feels comfortable. Try to be aware of the whole body. And then soothe the whole body with the breath. Some places he talks about first energizing the body by the way you breathe. Because there's the tendency, if you just calm down right at the beginning, you drift off to sleep or you zone out, which is not what you want. So breathe in a way that energizes you and then allow it to go calm. And think of that good energy spreading throughout the whole body. That's one activity. The other activity is, if any of the thoughts about the world come up right now, you put them aside. And if you've had some practice with generosity and some practice with virtue, you know how to do that. In other words, without a lot of recrimination, without a lot of guilt feelings, but just very matter-of-factly, because this is the nature of training the mind. You're ardent, alert, and mindful in doing this. Ardent, you're trying to do this well. Alert, you're trying to watch what's actually happening, what you're actually doing, and the results you're getting. And then you're mindful. Trying to keep all this in mind. This is what you want to do. And if you have any experience with meditation about how to deal with different distractions that come up, put that knowledge to use. If you find yourself zoning out, you try to remember, as soon as things get comfortable inside, you have to watch out. You have to give the mind work to do. This is why we talk about allowing the breath energy to spread through the whole body. Ask yourself, is there any part of the body that's not nourished by the breath? Examine it. Think of opening new pathways in the body. Until the whole body is saturated with good breath energy. It helps to wake you up. Keep you alert. And then you'll be talking to yourself as you do this. We tend to think of meditation as being a state in which you try not to talk to yourself. And there are higher states of concentration where things get really, really still in the mind. But in the beginning, you have to talk, because parts of the mind want to stay and other parts of the mind don't want to stay. So there has to be some reasoning back and forth. There's also one of the reasons why in John Lee, one of the Forest Masters, says you don't want to be too quick about getting rid of your sense of self. We hear about not self, not self, as an important insight. But it's one of those insights that you have to learn how to apply it at the right time and the right place. Like right now, you're responsible for staying with the breath. And you want to have the confidence that, yes, you can do this. As the Buddha said, that's a kind of sense of self. And it's an important part of the practice. You might have the sense that you will benefit from this. And there's the commentator inside. You want to train the commentator. So it's actually helpful. If it starts telling you that you're no good as a meditator, say, I want to hear something that's useful. You take responsibility. You observe. And you suggest ways of improving things. These are all different roles of your sense of self as you're meditating. And you need them because there are other senses of self in the mind that would pull you away. And those are the ones where you apply the perception of not self. You don't have to identify with them. You have the choice. And when you see yourself as not just one unitary thing, but as many different senses of self, it's a lot easier to start letting go of the unskillful ones, nourishing the skillful ones. Because part of the mind realizes that if you're going to be responsible for the practice, you need a sense of self. Just learn how to make it skillful. So that the skillful voices take over and the unskillful ones grow quiet. Let them go. So you're using your powers of judgment here. And that's part of this path of choosing. Choosing to be generous, choosing to be virtuous, choosing to develop your mindfulness, your concentration, your discernment. Judging what gives rise to long-term good results and what doesn't. And learning the skills to make the mind want to stay with what gives long-term good results and not identify with the other things. We know that it's not good to be judgmental, but it is good to be judicious. And that's what you're trying to develop as you meditate. That the whole practice is learning how to be judicious. So keep that in mind as you practice. And try to nourish the practice in all directions, in all dimensions. Because we are training the mind. But we're also training the heart. You want to train the heart to want long-term happiness. You want to train your mind to be good at directing you in the right direction. You want them to work together. And when they work together, that's when they grow.